There was a best-selling book that came out in 2002 entitled Choosing Civility, Choosing Civility by P.M. Forney. He is a co-founder of the Johns Hopkins Civility Project in Baltimore, Maryland, and still is, to my knowledge, that he is there. He was there when I was there and still is. I mentioned the copyright date because the year before, the professional football, American football team, the Ravens, the Baltimore Ravens, won the Super Bowl. Now, obviously, you're in the Baltimore area, you're ecstatic about the winning of the Super Bowl. It has been a tradition for sports champions to be given an invitation to the White House for an audience with the president. Through the years, some for political reasons decided not to go. Since this current president has been in office, few have. Unfortunately, the situation is untenable between the two. The controversy in 2001 about the Baltimore Ravens concerned the attire that several of the Ravens wore to the White House. Instead of the traditional suit with tie or some other formal attire, a number of them wore or dressed casually and going to the White House. Might have had a suit with a shirt and open collar, no tie. Some may have just had a polo shirt on. A couple of them had on t-shirts. One of the columnists in the Baltimore Sun, the newspaper in Baltimore, wrote an editorial supporting the attire that was followed by several letters to the editor entitled, "Were the Ravens Too Casual?" Were the Ravens too casual? That generated a lot of comment in the following weeks. A few years later, 2005, the lacrosse team, college team from Northwestern University in Chicago, went to the White House and several of the young ladies wore flip-flops. That generated a similar reaction among some. Were they too casual? It may have changed, but there is a dress code for an audience with the president. Or even if you were to go to see the queen, there is a dress code, and it is not t-shirts and flip-flops. Last year, Queen Elizabeth attended a celebration to mark Canada's 150th birthday. As she was descending the stairs, as I kind of recall, she stumbled a little bit. From Canada's government house, the Governor General helped the then 91-year-old down the stairs by lightly touching her arm. That created an outrage because you're not supposed to touch the Queen. The Queen initiates the contact. I don't know what Philip did in all those 70 years that they were married, but you're not supposed to touch the Queen. A week before that, a 31-year-old disabled man drowned up the road from us in Florida. It happened while a group of teenagers, 14 to 18, watched, ridiculed him, did nothing to help him, and recorded his death. The video recorded them laughing as the disabled man drowned. Last year, to promote their fight in August 2017, boxer Floyd Mayweather and mixed martial artist Conor McGregor went on tour. Tour stops were only for about an hour. At one stop, someone counted the expletives between the two when they are face to face and they are only there communicating with each other for a matter of minutes. Someone counted the expletives at over 230. In less than an hour, laced with racist and homophobic terms hurled at each other. Comedian and actress Kathy Griffin held an ISIS-like image of President Donald Trump's severed head, dripping with fake blood. because she didn't and doesn't like him. She later apologized because of some outrage at what she had done. But then she apologized for the apology. There have been lots of stories in the news showing that we are becoming uncivilized in, quote unquote, civilized societies. Forney has a list of over 40 words and expressions that participants in his workshops wrote down to explain what civility means to them. And he summarized it by saying this, and I quote, "Whatever civility might be, it has to do with courtesy, politeness, and good manners," end quote. Some recent articles reveal the trend. Wall Street Journal, "What happened to common courtesy?" Time Magazine, "Whatever happened to good service?" USA Today, "The decline of civility, another reviving common courtesy." And USA News, "Why people are rude and how it harms society." Yet, with all of the surveys, there is one survey that most people don't believe that they are. They can point the finger. Others are, but I'm not. In one survey that was taken, only 10% of those who were surveyed said, or the 10% they said that 90% of the people in the country are uncivil. Only 10% are civil. But what about you? Two-thirds of them say, well, I am. 2006, poll taken by Rudeness in America, poll taken showing the various areas of incivility today. Making annoying cell phone calls, 87%. Being rude and disrespectful, 84%. Using bad language, 80%. Using cells or emails mid-conversation, 74%. Now, let me bring out, with an audience this size, each one of you could probably cite almost like that 20, 30 examples of rudeness or incivility. I bring up one in regards to this last one, using cells in mid-conversation. A number of years ago, I was counseling someone for baptism. As I normally do, I start off in stating that baptism is the most important decision you can make in your life. Most important. More important than marriage, more important than buying a house, a car, anything. It is the number one decision you can make in your life. And the gentleman was in agreement. And as you know, I can get rather intense in a conversation, even counseling. And as I'm making a point, his cell phone rings. He grabs his cell phone, takes it out, starts talking, goes in the kitchen. Carries on the conversation by 5 minutes, then comes back and sits down. Okay, where were we? Now, thankfully, I didn't do what was in my mind to do. Because in my mind, once you decide you are interested in being baptized more than answering a cell phone unless it's an emergency, then I'll come back. But I'm not about to carry on a conversation and being interrupted because now you just carry on a casual conversation with someone. This is important with baptism. But that happens. Cell phones. It's amazing how it's almost like you can't live without it now. What did we do before them? What? Another survey, 10 years later, 2016, April the 22nd, entitled "Americans Believe Civility is on the Decline." It's by an organization formerly the National Opinion Research Center, in conjunction with Associated Press. Key findings. While most people feel that remarks or jokes about race, gender, and sexuality are unacceptable in public, they are slightly more accepting of these types of comments made in private. Well, it's not public, is it? I can use racist terms. I can use sexual terms in private. It's just that when I say it in public, then that becomes a problem. It's all right then for me to use the N-word in private, especially if I am among my fellow brothers and sisters. It's not proper to use it in public. Another finding, 2/3 see political campaigns this year, 2 years ago, as outdoing the public in levels of rudeness. For me, in my short existence on this earth, I have never seen anything quite like 2 years ago. And that's part of what prompted me to just talk about the topic even 2 years ago. 2 years ago. There's that cell phone again. Those of you in the audience can't hear it, but I can. Only 7% say they sometimes or frequently make remarks about someone's gender or sexuality in public, but 34% admit using profanity in public sometimes. And survey after survey brings out the point. We are becoming uncivilized in our societies. One other article before I get to the point. As I said, I could just go on just spending the whole time today dealing with examples of this. This was an article that I came across shortly after the other one. This came out August 1st, 2016, entitled "The Lack of Manners in Today's Society" by Ashley Potietti, case manager, bringing families together in the state of Missouri. She says this, "Recently, I've been blinded by the sheer lack of manners of people in today's society. All around me, I am surrounded by rude people with no regard for the safety, concern, or respect of the people who are around them, and it makes me question their upbringing. Sadly, this world has become a very dark place to live in, and I feel like you cannot trust anyone. The more I look around at this world, I feel like people only have one thing they want to look out for themselves." Prophecy, isn't it, by Paul? In the last days, perilous times will come. First characteristic, men will be lovers of themselves. The world revolves around me. I want to remind people of some pretty basic manners. I feel like civilization has forgotten and in return has created a downfall. Without manners and love for one another, this world will get darker and darker. Here are a list of some of the most forgotten manners that need to be reintroduced into today's society for better community living. One, saying please and thank you. Now, I'm not going to read her comments but on all of these, but saying please and thank you, that was a given, huh? You know, you give something to your child, what do you say? Thank you. And if asking for it, what do you say? Please. Two, holding the door open for others, male or female for that matter. Three, saying excuse me. Her fourth one we don't engage in, that is saying bless you when someone sneezes. Interesting, she goes back into the history of bless you from one perspective, that in the 6th century AD, there was a plague over in Italy, and it was believed that once you sneeze, that if you sneeze, you are opening yourself up to the plague. So the Pope instructed the people to say bless you and give them a sign of the cross. We obviously will not subject ourselves to that. And then the one other background to bless you, that once you sneeze, there are demons out there waiting to enter into your body. Okay? And so as you sneeze, it's almost as I initially heard it, your spirit of protection goes out of you, so you say, bless you, so the spirit can come in and the demon won't come in. So obviously we are not into bless you. So I just move on to 4, using eye contact. 5, waiting your turn. Now, again, I'm sure you can come up with examples as much as I fly. Dealing with immigrations and customs lines can be a challenge. Praise the Lord and thank you, Jesus. Yesterday, came in, not a problem. Second one in the immigration line, first one out of customs, I was in and out. Virgin Atlantic hadn't arrived, Delta hadn't arrived, New York, American hadn't arrived, and I'm, oh, thank you, Jesus. That wasn't the case earlier this year. Coming here to Barbados, all of them were here. So the line to immigration snaked almost to the back. That's where I used to use my old Barbados ID card. People looked at that card and they saw I had an afro, and what happened to you? And then they look at what I have on the immigration form and they say, well, I live in the United States. Well, this is no good. You can't use this anymore. So I had to end up going back through the visitor's line again, and it snaked all the way to the back. I had a lady behind me. As we're going from side to side, on one turn, she's beside me. On another turn, she's in front of me. Now, understand, you know I'm into sports. I played sports. I know what to do in a situation like that. In football, I played halfback. I know how to fake out an opponent. I say, no, don't do that. The woman might have some reason. She jumped right on in front. Okay, fine. Got through immigrations. Customs was backed up past Cave Shepherd, all the way back to the baggage claim area, 6. I don't know what was happening in Barbados at that time. Somebody came up to me and said, we were already in line. I was talking to a couple behind me from Britain. Can I get in front of you because my son is waiting outside? I said, it's all right with me if these people behind me don't have a problem. And so it turned around to the British couple. I said, well, we're waiting for somebody's waiting for us too. We don't want you jumping. So, you know, but the guy went up front anyway. And lo and behold, here is my lady friend who jumped in front of me. She didn't bother jumping in front of me in customs line. She just went up to the front. Now, I do have human nature. It does bother me when you should wait your turn in line. But that's not the case. Using someone's proper title, Mr. or Mrs., showing a sign of respect, or in her comment, she's talking about someone earning a doctorate degree, PhD, but using Mr. and Mrs. See, this is another one that has bothered me through the past. I'm going to cite examples that have bothered me. I'm not going to cite examples I've violated. And I have violated a number of these issues. But Mr. Harold Jackson, he's been our father in the faith in the black community in the church. I have never heard him referred to as Harold in public. Never, all right? His wife died back, I think it was in the 70s, his first wife, and so he was getting remarried again in the 80s. And some of you may have seen a picture on Facebook with all the black ministers who've come to Chicago for the wedding of Mr. Harold Jackson, the Helen Gibson, and that was the first time Mr. Ed Morris was the officiant. And as he said, do you, Harold, take Helen? And, you know, my lip dropped. I never heard that. I was definitely expecting him to say Mr. Jackson. Nope, but he said Harold. And my lip dropped. What bothered me, and I know that's the formality of the wedding, is that later I'm hearing young fellas younger than I am calling him Harold. And indeed, it bothered me going on. Ladies first. Another, modest is hottest. That's M-O-D-E-S-T. Just read her first line. I have four words for the women of today. Put your clothes on. She says a lot more than that, but I'm not going to go down that road. Another, proper sidewalk etiquette. Back in the olden days, it was proper for a man to escort a female wherever they went for her safety. It was also custom for a male to walk on the outside of the road and have the female toward the buildings. This kept the females safe from flying fecal matter from buildings above or sewage from the road that could splash on the lady's dress. It's a matter of protection. And then proper table manners. Proper table, no chewing with your mouth open. Keep your elbows off the table. Do not touch in front of others' plates, or do not reach in front of others' plates. Don't talk with your mouth full. Ask to be excused from the table. Keep all natural gases and slurps inside your body at all. Now, I know there are cultural issues, okay? It's actually in coming here, I've seen it on TV, but coming into Barbados in which you use a knife and a fork. Coming from America, you only use the fork. You only pick up the knife to cut your food and put your fork back down. I mean, your knife back down. Here, you use both knife and fork. That is acceptable. In Africa, going over there to Africa, they use fingers. That's the custom for them. And so it's a matter of learning the custom of the time. Go over here to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. The Apostle Paul gives a list of descriptions of love. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4, he says, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. It's not puffed up. And then verse 5, does not behave rudely. J.B. Phillips, love has good manners. Or we might translate it, love does not lack common courtesy, or love is not disrespectful, or love does not treat others harshly. It's not a matter, it doesn't matter who I offend. I'm going to say what I'm going to say, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and that's my final answer. The world is becoming more disrespectful and rude. Yet the Bible says love is not rude. Love is not rude, and this is our subject as we just introduced the topic today. Love is not rude. I put together a list of comments on 1 Corinthians 13 for a marriage seminar I had here in Barbados back in the 80s. From a number of sources that I had at the time, I put it together and handed it out in the marriage seminar. Several of those on this particular expression in verse 5. William Barclay says this, love does not behave gracelessly. It is a significant fact in Greek. The words for grace and for charm are the same. There's a kind of Christianity which takes delight in being blunt and almost brutal. We know individuals, even from the political arena, go back to Winston Churchill. There was a lady Astor who said to him one day, Mr. Churchill, if I were married to you, I'd poison you. Churchill says, Lady Astor, and if I were married to you, I'd take it. Amazing. Churchill was noted for his barbs, wasn't he? He can come back with some rejoinders, as one lady came up to him and says, "Mr. Churchill, you're drunk." Came back with the lady says, "Miss so-and-so, you're ugly. And in the morning, I'm going to be sober, but you're still going to be ugly." Love is not brutal. There is graciousness in Christian love, which never forgets that courtesy and tact and politeness are lovely things. Scott Kirby, Dating Guidelines from the Bible. He says this means that love does not behave disgracefully, dishonorably, or indecently. It does not embarrass others by its actions. It is characterized by tact and sensitivity. I think this also means that love should have good manners. And one other from Louis Mides, Love Within Limits, more of a commentary on this verse, 1 Corinthians 13:5, the first example. Love is never rude, because love is the power that moves us toward people with their good alone, or for their good alone. For their good alone. Go over to Philippians 2. Philippians 2. Love considers others. One definition, love seeks the highest good of the one love. Seeks the highest good. Paul intimates this in Philippians chapter 2, beginning with verse 3. Philippians 2, beginning with verse 3. Paul says, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others." Love elevates. It elevates others. The one love. And that's why Paul says in verse 5, "Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus." Because this is what Christ did. Christ occupied the throne of deity. He came down here to deal with dirt, to elevate dirt up to the family of God. Christ elevates. God elevates. Love elevates. Why? Why treat others, even those that kind of be uncivil, why even treat them with respect? Psalm chapter 8. Psalm chapter 8, verses 4 and 5. Here is David, man after God's own heart, who spent a lot of time out in the fields looking up at the stars. And as he looks at the stars, he says, "When I consider the heavens and so much of that above earth," Psalm chapter 8, verse 4, and this is from the Good News Bible, or Today's English Version. It says, "What is man that you think of him? Mere man that you care for him. Yet you made him inferior only to yourself. You crowned him with glory and honor." Only to yourself. Why? Treat others with respect. Because God made us all. God made everyone. And human beings are the crown of his physical creation, who are going to become a part of the family of God. We are creatures of God and are above even the animals of the earth. Let me bring out a somewhat parody on the creation of pets. A little lengthy, but you get a little bit of the point. It says, "And Adam said, Lord, when I was in the garden, you walked with me every day. Now I do not see you anymore. I am lonesome here, and it is difficult for me to remember how much you love me." God said, "No problem. I will create a companion for you that will be with you forever and will be a reflection of my love for you, so that you will know I love you, even when you cannot see me. Regardless of how selfish or childish or unlovable you may be. This new companion will accept you as you are and will love you as I do in spite of yourself. And God created a new animal to be a companion for Adam. And it was a good animal. And God was pleased. And the new animal was pleased to be with Adam. And he wagged his tail. Adam said, "But Lord, I have already named all the animals in the kingdom. And all the good names are taken. And I cannot think of a name for this new animal." God said, "No problem. Because I have created this new animal to be a reflection of my love for you, his name will be a reflection of my own name. You will call him Dog, D-O-G, a reflection of God, G-O-D. Dog lived with Adam and was a companion to him and loved him. Adam was comforted. God was pleased. Dog was content and wagged his tail. After a while, it came to pass that Adam's guardian angel came to the Lord and said, "Lord, Adam has become filled with pride. He struts and preens like a peacock, and he believes he is worthy of adoration. Dog has indeed taught him that he is loved, but no one has taught him humility." And the Lord said, "No problem. I will create for him a companion who will be with him forever, who will see him as he is. The companion will remind him of his limitations, so he will know that he is not always worthy of adoration." And God created cat to be a companion to Adam. And cat would not obey Adam. And when Adam gazed in the cat's eyes, he was reminded that he was not the supreme being. Adam learned humility. God was pleased. Adam was greatly improved. And cat did not care one way or the other. Which led to the comment. A dog thinks, "Hey, these people I live with feed me, love me, provide me with a nice, warm, dry house, pet me and take good care of me. They must be gods." A cat thinks, "Hey, these people I live with feed me, love me, provide me with a nice, warm, dry house, pet me and take good care of me. I must be God." Difference between the two that he is supposed to rule over, is he not? Unfortunately, we can show greater respect for the creation than for one another. Even children. Mother took a son to the restaurant. A waitress took the mother's order, turned to the boy. "What do you want?" Boy says, "I want hamburger, french fries, and a milkshake." Mother says, "He's going to have meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and green beans." Waitress didn't pay much attention to the mother. She went back, brought the mother's order, and brought exactly what the boy ordered. And the boy looked at his mother and says, "Wow, Mom, she thinks I'm real." Even children, they have the potential to be a part of the family of God. Animals don't. We are human, and we have that as our potential. Even those we don't consider lovable. I've mentioned before my namesake in high school, A.J. McDuffie, who's dead now. And for most of us in high school, we're glad that he's dead. Because he was a terror. Am I going to be surprised to see AJ coming up in the second resurrection? Even my president. I've been amazed at the number of times I've traveled throughout the Caribbean and the conversation comes around to my president. And the comment is, "What is wrong with America?" Even my president come up in the second resurrection.
Some probably, if they knew about the resurrection, say he's consigned to the third one. But it's coming up in the second resurrection. We can look at the example of David and Saul. Saul was a terror. He was a terror. David's attitude towards Saul, he's the Lord's anointed. Let the Lord take care of him. We understand something. We all are in this, created by God to become a part of the family of God. But you know, even as we age, we can have a tendency to look down, especially on younger ones. I can say what I want to because, hey, I done reached a good old age. I done passed the age of 60 or 70. I'll say what I'm in a community of 55 plus. Boy, they can cuss up a storm. This week, I'm talking to a guy, he has to be a veteran. He walks with his walker down the sidewalk, and he's got a motorized, and we're talking, I forgot what it was we were talking about, and he's just letting out some F words all over the place. I think back to as well, again, I said I can bring up example after example. When we lived in Maryland, suburb just north of Baltimore, Randallstown, I had a post office box at the post office. There was one time I went to the post office and I pulled in the parking space next to the handicap space. And as I was going into that space, I hear this, old codger behind me, blowing his horn at me because for him, I was parking in the handicap spot. I'm thinking, wait a minute, did they change? I get out of my car and I'm looking underneath and there's nothing that says it's in the handicapped spot. And so he stayed in the car while his wife went into the hall, in the post office, and I came back out. And as I was backing out, I then kind of, look, that's not handicapped. The look he gave me, it's almost like the man, if he had a gun, he would have shot me. We're different. But we're all in this together. Go to Matthew chapter 18. I'll pick this up. I don't have a whole lot of scriptures. I got a whole lot of examples. Matthew chapter 18. Remember the account of Peter asking Christ, how often should I forgive my brother? The custom back at that time was to forgive him three times. Peter went to seven. Seven times, Christ says no to 70 times seven. Christ then gives this example, Matthew chapter 18, verse 23. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And when he had begun to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. Today's standards, we're talking about millions of bucks. But as he was not able to pay, his master commanded that he be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and that payment be made. The servant therefore fell down before him, saying, Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. The relationship, okay? We've got somebody who has control over your life. And he now throws himself on his mercy. Verse 27, the master of that servant was moved with compassion, released him, forgave him his debt. But that servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. Well, we're talking about a couple of $1,000. I mean, it's not chump change, but it's not much by comparison to what he owed. And he laid his hands on him, took him by the throat, saying, pay me what you owe. So his fellow servant fell down at his feet and begged him, saying, have patience with me. I will pay you all. And he would not, throw him in jail. I bring this out because I look at the example of individuals, especially in the entertainment and sports arena in the United States, who are making millions of dollars. And for them, the world revolves around them. They'll go to the Oscars and they're dressed in their PJs or ESPYs or whatever. But in one instance, as I brought up about the Baltimore Ravens, most prominent player on the Baltimore Ravens at the time, who no doubt is
one of the greatest to ever play the position that he played on in the game of football. He was one of those who went to the White House, just had the suit on, open collared shirt. But he got caught up in a situation down in Atlanta in which somebody was killed. And he apparently had some involvement in it. In his limousine, they found blood in his limousine. When he appeared before the judge, he was dressed GQ. There was no open collar. There were no flip-flops. He's coming before the judge, and this judge has control over his life, just like this example. In that instance, I don't care if I think the world is revolving around me. I know that it isn't. I'm going to dress the part. But God says, all are mine. Be respectful. Be respectful to everybody. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. Be respectful to the leader. Be respectful to the beggar on the street. Be respectful to the CEO. Be respectful to the homeless guy. God made them all. Old children's song, God made me. God made me. In the Bible book, it says that God made me. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17. First part of verse 17 of 1 Peter chapter 2. I'm going to bring this out in the NIV. NIV of 1 Peter chapter 2, it says, show proper respect to everyone. Show proper respect to everyone. Peter leaves no doubt about it. We are expected to respect everyone. That's the last word here in the NIV, everyone. That means my wife, my husband. That means my boss, that unpopular schoolmate that I might have. Even the A.J. McDuffies. Because ultimately, A.J. is going to make it into the family of God unless he turns away. That annoying coworker, that annoying relative that won't go home. You know, they're going to stay there and stay there. Show respect. I think a benchmark for disrespect in the United States happened in the 70s with Watergate. I noticed society changing. It was already on the cusp of changing at the time because in the 60s we had the hippie movement and then there was the fallout, the counterculture, LSD and the rest. And definitely with Watergate, it just kind of gave the society some credibility now for being uncivilized. It's unfortunate, but it continued a downward trend into the 80s. And I saw even as the change occurred, masculinity was demasculized. Men were only Dagwood Bumsteads. Men could do no right. It was the beginning of the feminist movement earlier that brought this about. You cannot say anything positive about, yeah, we had some bad apples who did not know what masculinity was about, just like in the police. So you have some bad ones. But you just see this change occurring in society. There's an article that appeared in the LA Times back in the 80s. Syndicated columnist, Jody Powell, writing about a movie that he saw. It was three generations of women. And the various problems, sexual issues that all of the women were encountering. And as he is bringing up about this, he says, that wasn't the thing that surprised me. It was the teenage girl who called grandmother Mags. Not Nana. Not grandmother. Not even a first name. Called her some variation of her name, Mags. Mags. In reading the article, you know, if I called my grandmother Maud, I wouldn't be here today. You know, I'd be sick. It wouldn't be a matter of going to hospital. I'd be in the morgue. It's different. How many would go up to Queen Elizabeth? What's happening, Liz?
Different.
It's different. Also in the LA Times, there was a school teacher who wrote to the Times back in the 80s as well. Well, actually in the 90s. She, as she had the custom of doing in the school system where she taught, she entered into the classroom every day and she would say to her students, "Good morning, class," and they would respond, "Good morning, Mrs. Jones." She enjoyed that through the years and then she retired. Back in the early 90s, she decided to go back to the classroom. Things had changed. She figured that, hey, culture has changed, so maybe things are changing, hairstyles, clothing. But she remembered what she did before, and she entered into this classroom, and she said, "Good morning, class." Kid on the front row said, "Shut up, B." And the rest of the kids started laughing. And so as she wrote the LA Times, she had a couple of questions. She says, what happened in America between "Good morning, Mrs. Jones," and "Shut up, B"? You know, I'm not saying a word. And then the second question, who's going to do something about it? Then you look at the religion and even politics. Again, I use an example. This is one of my negatives. When I was in high school, I was running for first vice president of the student council. They wanted me to run for president. I said, I don't want to be in that top position of nothing. I'll settle for first vice president of the student council. So as I started the campaign, I'm running against the girl who is definitely apart from us, okay? Becky was on a pedestal. She is a PK, and her brother, who was also PK, we're all in the same class. Brother, I think, fell behind a year or whatever it was. He's trying his best to be like us, normal. Becky was great girl, valedictorian of our class. I'm running against Becky. I go to my minister, Episcopalian Church, man that knows my family, was in school with my mother. I said, I'm running against Becky. You got any advice for me? And the minister said, you got to talk about it like a dog. I said, no. Not Becky. I can talk about anybody else. I can even talk about myself. But not Becky. You talk about the example of what a person, a teenager should be. This is Becky. He says, you want to win? You got to talk about it like a dog. All right, I still have some of my flyers in my scrapbook, you know, that mimeographed off. If you want to see a champ, vote for Hamp. 2, 4, 6, 8. Who do we appreciate? Hampton. I'm passing all of these things around. And I had one other flyer that I used. I used for the conclusion of my speech to the assembly. Becky spoke. Then I spoke, and I forget what it is that I said to her, but that flyer says it was based on Quaker Oats. Nothing is better for thee than me. I had those flying all around my high school. And so as I'm going through building up to this crescendo, and then as I came to the conclusion, and I said, and remember, sat down. I forgot the quote. I do believe God had something to do with that in me. All right. I couldn't think of that quote for no reason. Nothing is better for thee than me. I won. But you know, it's over 50 years. I haven't seen Becky. I haven't seen Becky since high school. Well, we did. We had scholarships to go to Howard University. But once I left from Howard University, I haven't seen Becky for 50 years. I know she is a doctor, she's a gynecologist, she's even gone to Jamaica. I've heard from a brother about going to Jamaica. One of the things, and I've only been to one class reunion, that was the 40th, and she wasn't there. One of the things I wanted to do, if I ever came across Becky again, is apologize. And as I mentioned about the political campaign here 2 years ago in the United States, one of the most crass, crude, vulgar campaigns ever. God never does anything or commands us to do anything without telling us the reason why. One of the reasons we are to respect others is because it minimizes conflict, doesn't it? Proverbs 15, verse 1, a soft answer turns away wrath. But it goes on and says, but harsh word stirs up anger. Proverbs 15, 1, that's certainly a principle. However, the 20th, 21st century version of the second part of that verse, the middle finger stirs up anger. You come across that? Driving in this world of ours, we can make some obscene gestures. Left, right, I mean, I've been subjected to it. One, I knew I had done wrong. The other one, I'm trying to figure out, what in the world did I do to you? But then another little parody on the obscene finger. I only have one other scripture, and I'll wrap this up. The preacher's wife was known to have led a sheltered life and really showed it as she talks to her Sunday school class about a wonderful religious experience that she had last week. The other day, I went to the local Christian bookstore where I saw a Hunk If You Love Jesus bumper sticker. I was feeling particularly sassy that day because I had just come from a thrilling women's Bible study at the church. So I bought the bumper sticker, put it on the back bumper of my car. I'm really glad that I did. What followed was a truly uplifting experience. I was stopped at the light of a busy intersection, just lost in thought about the Lord, and I did not notice that the light had changed. It's a good thing someone else loves Jesus, or I may have never noticed that the light had changed. I found out that lots of people love Jesus, while the guy behind me started to honk like crazy. And then he leaned out the window and screamed, for the love of God, go, go. Everyone was honking. I leaned out my window and waved and smiled to all loving people, all those loving people. And I even honked my horn a few times to share in the love. I saw a guy waving a funny way with only his middle finger stuck up in the air. When I asked my teenage son in the back seat what this meant, he said that it was nothing, probably a Hawaiian good luck sign or something. Well, I have never met a person from Hawaii, so I leaned out the window and gave him the good luck sign back. My son burst into laughter. Why, even he was enjoying the love of this religious experience. A couple of the people were so caught up in the joy of the moment that they got out of their car and were walking towards me. I bet they wanted to pray or ask what church I attended. But that is when I noticed that the light had changed. I waved one more time to my loving brothers and sisters and drove through the intersection. I was the only car that got across the intersection before the light changed again. I felt kind of bad that I had to leave them all and all that love they had shared. So I slowed the car down, leaned out the window, and gave them the Hawaiian good luck sign one more time and drove away. It ain't no good luck. And I'm sure, hey, if you haven't had it, you haven't experienced it here, come to America, drive around, inevitably you will experience it. Why? We don't show respect. Sports, it's amazing how we have degenerated even in sports. European football, you know certain matches, what inevitably is going to happen. But then there's one other reason to bring out about showing respect and to everyone is that is we will get back what we give. We will get back what we give. There's that principle in Galatians chapter 6, verse 7, isn't it? Don't be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever man sows, that is what he's also going to reap. We reap what we sow. Principle of reciprocity. You know, what we give, we receive. If I give rudeness, have a tendency to receive rudeness in return. Over here to Proverbs 11, verse 17. Proverbs 11, verse 17. You know, you find it in restaurant. A good friend of mine had a tendency to send his food back, especially the meat wasn't cooked the way that he wanted. Got on his case. I said, how do you know if you now have annoyed that waitress and she went in the back and she just spat on your meat and brought it back to you? I mean, hey, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. Proverbs 11, verse 17, NIV. A kind man benefits himself, but a cruel man brings trouble on himself. It happens. It happens. It's sad to see the talent of some of these youngsters from the hood. I mean, amazing talent with rap. Tremendous. The terminologies using with the B's and the hoes and the rest, not the best, but amazing how on a split second these guys can rhyme just like that. But the lifestyle, what happens? Tupac, Biggie. And it reminds me so much of the 8 years I had in Chicago. As I look at the narrative in the news media today, rarely is it that they're going to focus on what these kids are going through in the inner city of Chicago. One of the most difficult places in the United States, more so than New York, more so than LA. It's on akin with Kingston. And it's going on all the time. Parkland happens constantly in Chicago. But that's not newsworthy. But that's the only life that they know. That's the only life that they know. Love is not rude. Never pays to be rude. Never gets the intended result. Businesses know that. If you treat the customer with respect, you generally will get respect in return. If you disrespect the customer probably will not return. Final example I bring out is from a book entitled How to Win Customers and Keep Them for Life by business author Michael Leboeuf. He talks about an example of what happened to an individual by the name of Robert. He says as he walked up to the appropriate counter, he's inside of a store, he's trying to discount store, he's trying to buy a pair of binoculars. He says as he walked up to the appropriate counter, he noticed that he was the only customer in the store. Behind the counter were two salespersons. One was so preoccupied talking to mama on the telephone that she refused to acknowledge that Robert was there. At the other end of the counter, a second salesperson was unloading inventory from a box onto the shelves. Growing impatient, Robert walked down to her end of the counter and just stood there. Finally, she looked up at him and says, "You got a number?" Robert asked, "I got a what?" Trying to control his astonishment at such absurdity because nobody else is in the store. "You got a number? You got to have a number." Robert replied, "Lady, I'm the only customer in the store. I don't need a number. Can't you see how ridiculous this is? But she failed to see the absurdity and insisted that Robert take a number before agreeing to wait on him. By now, it was obvious to Robert that she was more interested in following procedure than helping customers. So he went to the take a number machine, pulled number 37, walked back to the salesperson. With that, she promptly went to her number counter, which revealed that the last customer waited on had been holding number 34. So she screamed out, 35! 35! Nobody. 36! 36! Nobody. 37! Robert said, I'm number 37. She asked, cracking a smile, may I help you? He said, no, and he turned and walked away. Those trend researchers state that the businesses that are going to succeed in this, the 21st century, are the ones who focus on customer service. Customer service. What you give out is what you get back. Same is true of relationships. Those relationships that survive, even marital ones that survive, are those who focus on respecting one another. Love is not rude to anyone. We'll try to finish this in 2 weeks' time.